Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. Thank you so much for tuning in. The listenership has been fantastic as of late, so keep it up out there. Last week, we had Brandon Novak on from Jackass, and this week is no different. We got a great episode coming up for you. Now, before we get to that, I want to thank some of the sponsors and tell you about some of the sponsors that have been with us for a long time, and we are very happy to work with. One of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing. Manskirt Brewing is located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in Main Street, in the old bank building, and it's just a great place to craft beer. We were there over the weekend checking out the murals, checking out Joe in his Manskirt, and checking out their 8 seasonally inspired ales. Something different all the time. In fact, they just released their new flagship Czech Pilsner, Checks and Balances. And they have Big Brew in Morristown coming up and their 3rd anniversary party on Saturday the 10th. Now, a lot of things going on in Manskirt Land, so make sure you go check them out. Go play some games, go hang out, listen to some music, and of course, try their great beer. That is Manskirt Brewing. Now, we're also brought to you by Wolf Nation Apparel. Wake up, live free. It's only a dream if you are not pursuing it. Wolf Nation is just putting out designer clothing for men, women, children, boys, girls, and pushing out all new things. They got leggings and snapback hats that just came out, tank tops, sweatshirts, and just a great entrepreneur trying to get his clothing line off the ground. Go to wolfnation.rocks and check out some of their stuff, and they're taking pre-orders now. So again, that is Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based all out of beer bars and breweries in New Jersey. Every day there's pretty much a trivia game going on somewhere in the state of New Jersey by Trivia Revolution, and it is awesome. It is free to play. You can win prizes to different breweries, and you could be the stupidest person there and still win. So it is a great time. So go check out Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, this week on the show, we are joined by world-renowned beatboxer, beatboxing champion, Jay Flo. So you got to check out this guy's skill. Pretty interesting to hear about how a guy gets into beatboxing and what you can do with it. So check out Jay Flo and enjoy the podcast.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right. Hello, everybody. Hello, listeners all around the world. The millions.
Oh, is that my...
That was your cue. That was your cue.
Oh.
The millions.
Oh. And millions?
Of listeners throughout Podcast Nation. Good morning. No, not good morning. What is it? This good evening. Well, I guess it really depends when they're going to listen to this. We could be...
We're not really doing it live, so...
Yeah, I mean, we could be someone's morning drive. We could be someone's bathroom routine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that's kind of the category we fit more into, but
yeah.
You know,
we can never get into that constipated group. You know, like they refuse. They're like, nope, there's a specific place, and you're not there.
I always like to ask them, what's the holdup? here all episode, folks. We are here all episode. But welcome back. If this is your first time tuning in, that's Mike down there in the sweet, sweet state of Georgia.
Yep.
And then this is Scott here in New Jersey, and this is Verbal Shenanigans. So welcome to this weekly installment of fun. Last weekend we took a week off, but we had Brandon Novak last week from Jackass. So it was a pretty cool episode. Got to find out a lot of things you do when you are addicted to heroin.
Yeah, I was expecting the glamorous life, you know. I had a heroin problem. I had to go do an Oscar award-winning movie afterwards, you know.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like some of these rock stars, they do all right.
Yeah, well, mostly it's somebody inside feeding them, so it's not like they're going out and getting it. They're just getting fed within, and it's like, yeah, we got your tab.
How do you do with your heroin addiction?
You know, I put a week on to take a week off. You know, I'm more, you know, sometimes I'm a holiday weekend type of heroin guy.
You're like a you celebrate occasionally with some smack.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'd sit back, I'm relaxing on an Arbor Day, and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to shoot up. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, Christmas morning, you know, sitting around in your Christmas pajamas, exchanging gifts, having hot chocolate, and, you know, just a little pass the needle around to the family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I start a roaring fire, put my spoon on top of it, and we're good to go.
The holiday, what are they, the Yule log, it heats your heroin up.
Yeah, you know.
It's
festive and all. It's very festive. All piney and whatever when it goes into my veins.
For Halloween, you dress the needle up like something, you know, it doesn't look like a needle. Like, oh,
see, most parents look at the children's candy to find needles to get rid of it. I get them and I'm like, I know what I'm going to use this for.
Right. Like one year the needle looks like, you know, Harry Potter's wand, and then it's like a sword that goes with your costume. Like, oops, I got stabbed. Like, Yeah. Thanksgiving, you just inject it into the turkey.
Oh, it makes a beautiful stuffing. Methanol, it just soaks right in there. You don't even have to fry it. It's so juicy, mainly because you're hallucinating.
The tryptophan and the heroin together, it knocks you out wonderfully.
Yeah. 1 year I woke up, it was April. It was weird.
Just in time for April Fool's Day. You put a bunch of needles, like some with heroin, some without. Oh, got you. That was heroin.
You got pearls.
Now you're addicted to smack. What? Gotcha.
The new hidden camera show. You just got smacked.
You just got addicted.
Somebody sits on a bench. Ow! What the hell poked me? Gotcha!
Those weren't Skittles. Those were Percocets. You got drugged.
That ain't a rainbow you tasting.
I know we have, like, people listening now that were addicted to heroin are like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I'm getting off this stuff. Damn it.
But anyway. So, I guess, you ever have people at work that play the lottery?
I mean, I haven't heard it from my new place. My old place, I mean, I think the magic number is around 300 million, where everybody's like, oh, nope. I'm starting the pool.
I know.
I'm starting the pool.
I was just thinking today, because the same thing happened in my job. The person comes around with the envelopes. Oh, we got a pool for Tuesday and a pool for Wednesday. It's $4 a piece. I'm like, God damn it. And, you know, it's like, even though it's like $4, it has $8, you know you're not going to win, but you can't not go in on it.
Yeah, you know you're throwing money away, but the last thing on earth you could fathom is everybody at work just like celebrating, and you just show up there like, Scott, you have to take over 12 people's positions because you decided to hold on to that Dunkin' Donuts coffee money.
That is the literally worst case scenario. All your friends like retire with like $25 million, and you are stuck with your $4 in your pocket that you forgot to hand in.
What do you think is worse? The people, them going away, smiling and all that, or that one guy who says, I'm going to work through it, and then every day you're going to see him walk through the halls, reminding him, ah, oh, Scotty, man, oh. I mean, I got the new Porsche, you know, the last one got a little mark on it, so, you know, I had to get rid of it, and all. You know what it's like, right?
I think it would be worse probably seeing the guy that I know is doing the same job as me, but he can stop doing that job at any moment. Like he doesn't, like the job wouldn't stop meaning anything to him. Like, like I feel like if I won, I wouldn't quit working. I might not do the same job. I might take a risk and like, I don't know, open a brewery or do something that like maybe I like more. Okay, but I definitely wouldn't stop working because that money runs out, and it never seems to go well for people who just completely quit everything. I don't think I'd obviously pay off all my debt. I'd probably buy a house, just you know, a nice house, but nothing crazy. But pay it full, so I have no mortgage. That would be cool. And I'm not a big car guy. Like, I could really care less about having, like, a Porsche or a sports car or anything. So maybe just pay off my car and maybe, all right, maybe get a new truck or something. Nothing, you know, nothing. I don't think I would go crazy.
I would, nothing where you know you're doing your regular routine and then all of a sudden, dang it.
Yeah,
that's right. I'm rich. I forgot that. Dang it.
Yeah, I'd probably put a bunch in the bank. I'd probably, you know, I'd probably try to take care of the immediate family, but then I'd probably just travel a lot. Like, whenever I wanted to go on vacation, I'd just go on awesome vacations all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, no fear about what to do. Like, oh, I can't afford to do that. I just do it. That would be nice.
But yeah, that's going to be the good feeling. It's just wake up one day. You know what? I'm going to Spain. Mm-hmm. Screw it. I'm going there.
Yep.
I think we had this conversation before. Remember I talked about getting, like, the pasta they make in the cheese bowl?
Yeah.
Throw the hot pasta in there and make a spicy wine. And
Yeah. We said that.
I kind of forget what the other ones were. I found that there's apparently are spicy wines out there, so I would not start the revolution. Apparently already started, and nobody cared.
Well, because you didn't act fast enough. That's why. And all the millions of listeners that we have, someone sucked that idea up. I'm sure there's a snake milk salesman out there too that just killing it right now.
Oh man,
you could
the salesman or the snake biting him for taking the milk?
Well, you know, there's some casualties in any investment, so
some things are worth dying for. Snake milk is one.
Someone right is milking snakes and just making a killing. Now, you could have done that. I guarantee there's some snake milking in Georgia. The snake milk market is probably wide open in Georgia.
It would be kind of competitive, though, wouldn't you think? Don't you think I should, like, move to Ohio and do that, figuring there's no competition up there?
So you think there's more snake milkers per capita in Georgia than there is Ohio?
In this kind of, like, Rust Belt / Bible Belt area, I feel that it'd be kind of harsh, you know? Like, there's almost like a mafia of snake milkers that'd be like, you know, you got a good business here.
You know,
see somebody kick your box full of snakes.
You know those shows, like Alaskan Gold and all that, where they're like, you know, they risk it all and go dig. Like, there's 150 of them on Discovery Channel. Everything's like Alaska something, and like they go and they dig for gold, pan for gold, try to find it underwater, or they go dig. Maybe there's a show there, just like guys who try to risk it all to become snake milkers.
Mike came in yesterday. He talked about python milk. I'm like, what? You don't get good snake milk from pythons.
Well,
this is a rattlesnake country, Mike.
Speaking of Bible Belt, I see that you went to old Talladega over there.
Yep. Weekend trip. We went down to Alabama. We started off the weekend at a lovely little campground called DeSoto Caverns.
Soda Caverns.
The Soda Caverns.
Oh, the
S-O-T-O.
The Soda Caverns. Got it.
Yeah. Not like the Burls.
Oh,
there's no guy named Soda who happens to have caverns after he won the lottery. Mm. It just happens to be Soda Caverns.
Now, how far a drive is Bama for you?
To get over to the borders, it's about... first we went to a brewery... I think it was called Cahia Brewing Company, which was really good. That's listed as about an hour 10 to get there. To go past the border, I think it's probably about 30, 40 minutes. I mean, the one caveat I didn't realize was I went over a time zone. So I scheduled everything perfectly. And then it's like, oh, honey, we have to kill 40 minutes all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's right. Killing 40 minutes. It would be worse if it was the other way around. Like, you had to skip something because you jumped an hour forward.
Yeah. But, so the caverns they have there, it's really nice. They got, like, century-old stalagmites and stalactites. And they had, like, a Halloween festival there. So they had, like, a maze with people jumping out and scaring you. They actually...
Did you see any fat kids trying to get through holes?
No, that was not there. There was some kid there that was a little too preppy for the area. It's like I think they do tours of the caverns every like 10 minutes, and they showed up and they're like, well, you know, we have seven for this tour, so you can wait around for like 8 minutes. And, you know, he's like, so they can go and not me? Well, yes, so you just have to wait for the 10 minutes. But they're going in 1 minute, as you were saying. It just seemed like a kid is just like, all right, this is like a small little place, but you still need a smack in your face. You know?
Or just leave them in the caverns.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yeah, throw them in there somewhere. But, you know, that's a really nice thing to have like a laser show in there, which is kind of odd how they talk about, you know, the centuries of stalagmites forming and growing. And they're like, you can't touch it because your oils can cause it to stop growing. But at the same time, they're doing like laser Floyd in the middle of the caverns for some reason, which seemed odd.
Did one of those like hologram Tupacs, like did they have one of those, like where Tupac kind of came out of nowhere and was rapping in the cavern?
No, but the funny thing was they had like a special Halloween one, and then we're like staring at it for like 2 minutes as it's not moving, and they're like, okay, we're gonna play the regular one now.
Wouldn't it be awesome if like in the middle of some caverns in Alabama they had this amazing like holographic like Notorious B.I.G. and Tupac like battle like you see on
they came out of the afterlife and came into a laser show in Alabama. We know if we win here we can win anywhere.
Oh, dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Just echoes in the cavern.
Yeah,
but I used to read Word Up magazine. Zine.
So they also had like a Halloween thing in the caverns too, which I found odd because, like I said, you can't touch anything, but they seem to have no problems. People walking in pitch black in a fogging cavern with others just like jumping out and scaring the living crap out of people, not worrying you're going to like crack open one of the stalagmites. So,
yeah. Well, this is the most I've ever heard stalagmite in one conversation.
Well, you know, we're here to break records, to break molds. And the other funny thing was, as a part of it, like somebody, one of the actors came out and it's like, come with me and I'll show you the way. And like everybody in my group, including Izzy, are like, no, you're one of the evil ones they told us about. So they're like walking away and I'm next to this girl and she's like, no, seriously, you need to come here. Guys, you... you can't go over there. That's dangerous.
Well, we have been to a couple haunted houses with your wife, and she I remember her saying hi to to many of the ghoulish figures. So I can see her doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were just saying yesterday. It's kind of a kind of a bummer. We had no haunted house this year, unless you guys fly up to Jersey real quick and we'll go to the asylum and then fly away.
Yeah, if I hit the lottery tomorrow, because I paid for my tickets, and I'll just be like, man, Scott, it's a shame you didn't come in with me, you know, but
They probably got cool haunted houses down there, too.
Yeah, they got some good stuff down here. I got to check it out. I got some friends down here we're talking about. It's all a matter if we can make it on a certain weekend. But it was our first camping adventure and all. We had to do the tent and everything went out well. The only problem was the air mattress that we had was too big for the tent. So we had to sleep on sleeping bags. And of course I did everything right except one pine cone I didn't clean, and it was right where I was trying to sleep and all, like right in the center of my back. So no matter where I turned, it was either we had no room or I'm sleeping on a pine cone.
Now, do you have camping experience, or this is like the first go at it?
I've done it a couple times. I did it once up in Northeast Pennsylvania with some former coworkers up there. We were actually like a few miles from the what was it up there? Nuclear power plant, which was odd.
That explains everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go power plant camping.
Let's throw rocks at the silo, see what happens.
Burlew was never the same before.
Ha ha, it's smoking. But then the next day we went to Talladega for the race.
Now, is this the only race that happens at Talladega, or there are a bunch?
They do two races. They have two cup races a year. And on the Saturday before, it's either truck or Xfinity. So they have two races in the spring and two races in the fall. And this was their big race now, so because it's in the playoffs and everything.
Playoffs?
But, yeah. Your good Jim Moore impression everybody loves.
Thank you.
But, yeah, so I kind of, when I first said I was thinking about going to Talladega, since it was near my birthday, I'm like, I'll just go there just to check it out, cross it off my bucket list or whatever.
Right.
And the wife was kind of like, oh, you don't want to include me in this experience? And it's one of those, all right, I'm going to bring you. I know this answer. I could put money on this answer, honey. But if you want to go, you can come with me. And she was not fond of the people of the parking lot. The when you hear that kind of description of NASCAR fans where, you know, the they're drunken, Republican, redneck, SOBs, and you're like, no, it's not. And we can talk about how we were up in Pocono, didn't see that. I've been to races in Dover and Watkins Glen and Nazareth. And, you know, it's just a stereotype, what they say. We met the stereotype straight on, and there was 100,000 of that stereotype there.
Yeah, well, like, that Mason-Dixon line, I think it's a little different.
Right? Yeah. I can clearly say I probably counted around 50 Confederate flags in our area. Counted about anywhere from 20 to 30 Trump flags and T-shirts. Counted about 10 Blue Lives Matter. Izzy had to go to the bathroom, and we were at the porta potty, and these drunk people were like, "George, your tits!"
Jesus Christ! So what you're saying, it's exactly like a Jets game.
I've yet to go to a Jets game. I haven't gone to that area, but I can. I mean, I'm one of those guys. I can sit back and go, "All right, this isn't a cool environment, but you know, I came here for the race. I'm going to race.
Right.
I can give a crap about everybody else." Izzy doesn't know how to let go of that side. In fact, we're on the tram and like there's like college kids or like you can tell they've been drinking since 9 a.m. They brought sofas to the parking lot to lay on them with every like college kind of catcalling line to every girl that comes through, and then as we pass by, Izzy's like, "Can you believe that? That's so disgusting." Blah blah blah. And as nicely as I can tell her to say, "Shut up," I tried as best I can. And the reason I specifically say it is, you know, they're not going to attack anybody at the track just because you're a liberal or whatever, Jewish or anything like that. If you start knocking them, you start giving them a reason to go, "What the hell is that?" So I had to calm her rear end down, stop talking and all. And then she was obsessed with a photo I sent you. Like, it took a picture where it's like,
yeah, I'm looking at it currently.
This is Talladega. Like, she looked at that picture and she pointed out about 30 redneck things about it.
Let me point out a few. This is like one of those old, like, remember Highlights magazines where you had the circle? Yeah. Like, all right, so we got a bunch of cutoff overalls. We got cutoff overalls, cutoff jean shorts, American flag boots.
Yeah,
I'm very fond of the guys with the Daisy Dukes that also have, of course, they have knee injuries. They got to have scrapes on.
You can't have sexy legs in the South. You got to show them off, and they got to be disgusting.
Yeah, they got to be horrific looking. So I noticed two guys standing next to each other. Well, they're two apart. They both got bandages on their knees. A lot of sleeves, sleeveless shirts. Sleeves not really a thing down there.
Yeah, well, the one guy seemed to cut his like tank top where it has no sides to it. It's just it goes over your neck and that covers your body, but there's nothing on the side.
Yeah. a bunch of crappy sayings on T-shirts, definitely beer cans in everybody's hand. One thing that sticks out strange, ooh, I found Velcro shoes, sticks out strangely is the guy in the Yankee jersey. He must have been visiting. He looks like the guy in the Yankee jersey looks like he visited, and his friends were like, "You got to cut those shorts, boy." And like he cut them real quick, and like, I was like, "I got to fit in down here." But
yeah, Izzy was obsessed with that guy. She's like, "Well, I guess that guy's normal. He's got a Yankees habit." And she like zoomed in on his shorts. She's like, "Wait a minute, those were jeans. He cut jeans to make shorts."
Yeah, he's got high white socks on too. It's not a pretty look. What I'm also noticing, which is not surprising by this clientele, not a woman to be found in that picture.
Yeah, the female population, it was there. I saw plenty of women, but when you got a massive group, kind of a men's club there.
Absolutely.
No girls involved and all. Now, you figure with all the couch sitting, drinking, and catcalling, that would have got a couple, but... shocked to tell you, no. My favorite person, which I didn't get a picture of, was a guy who had jorts with sandals with blue toenail polish on, with two toe rings on each foot.
Nice. Now, do you think? Let me ask you. Do you think it's like now? There's actual rednecks, right? Like that don't know they're really rednecks. That's just their, you know, they're rednecks. Like they are bred rednecks. Or do you think it's almost them playing up into like a costume more? Like when you a country concert, you see everybody wearing like American flag and cowboy hats. Do you think it's more of them ramping that up too, almost like a theme party?
That's why I kind of see it as like an extra spring break, a college kind of party kind of thing where you just get ballistic hammered. And you just don't care what happens the rest of the weekend and all that. I will report, I did see one trailer with an 01 painted on it, but it wasn't full Dukes of Hazzard, unfortunately. They gave homage, but...
I wonder if John Schneider was there. He might have been there.
He could have been.
Brother, I got to be honest, none of that... the clientele you just spoke of or sent me really, really surprises me. Okay. Now you've been to a couple races before in your life, whether it's Pocono, a couple play. Now you know what to expect. What is it like bringing your now wife to an event that, you know, I know that she's not into NASCAR, unless you've brainwashed her already to get into that. But did she enjoy the event? Like, what is it like for someone that's never been there, that's not into it? Like, I feel like,
well,
like what you just described, I feel like guys obviously can probably adapt more than maybe like a female not into it.
Well, it's kind of twofold with Izzy. I mean, one, she was bored, and two, it was chuckily a little warmer than we expected. So right off the bat, when she came there, she had the worst attire to go there in. Number one, walking about a mile, she was wearing UGG boots. That's kind of a not smart move. Number two, she was wearing her full leggings and a full kind of full arm top. I don't want to say dress, but kind of in that realm, if you know what I mean.
So what you're saying is you guys were matching?
No. I was... No, I had my NASCAR gear. I actually wore my Verbal Shenanigans shirt there.
But no Uggs? No Uggs this time?
No.
Remember what happened the last race when you wore Uggs?
I'm like, fool me four times, shame on me. Fool me a fifth time, shame on you, Uggs. So it was a little warm, and the seats we were at, it didn't get under the shadows until later. So like the first set of laps, it's broken up 55, 55, and 78. So I would say probably about 35 laps in, I can tell she was borderline miserable. I tried things to, you know, keep her upbeat. I bought a scanner so we can listen to like the radio broadcast and listening to the drivers talking to their crew chiefs or whatsoever. I brought her to some open seats I found later on in front of the pit row so she could watch the pit team work. I know when we went to to Pocono, and you were checking the, you were intrigued by the pit squad, pit team and stuff like that, and how fast they do it. But in the end, I knew that it, it was going to be pretty much a losing effort. The only thing that could have been like, wow, would have been if what Talladega is known for, which is the big one where wreck where there's like 30 cars involved, but they raced pretty clean this weekend. So that didn't happen. So for the most part, Izzy went under the awning on a bench, and she was on like Facebook and talking to texting her friends and stuff like that. I mean, we did pumpkin spice, whatever, from there, try to cheer her up. But it was a losing cause all the way. You know, it wasn't probably not the right track. Maybe if it was a night race at a short track where you can see all the action and fans are more excited about it. I mean, it was so loud there. You can't even like chit chat with somebody next to you. So it's not like you can gain anything from that. In fact, the, speaking of people near me, the only thing I sat back, like I said, when I go to these races, I don't blink an eye to everybody. So that atmosphere maybe not be for me, but I won't knock them. But the one thing I kind of sat back and said, that's effed up. There was a family there, a four with a, I'd probably say the boy and the girl were probably like 5 and 6 or 7 and 6, somewhere in that range. They didn't bring any earplugs. They didn't bring any earphones or anything to muffle the sounds. And I had earplugs and a headset over my head, and it's still insanely loud. And really? I'm looking at this like 5-year-old girl holding her ears to keep the noise out of her system. And I'm just like, you gotta be kidding me. You, it's $3 for a pair of earplugs. Go over there and save your kid and all. You could tell the girls were just miserable. So
put these Pabst Blue Ribbon cans on your ears.
Wait, I'm not done with that one. Don't, give back the Pops.
There's a little swill in the bottom.
Yeah. So, we were going to take off at like 20 to go, and the one part that was interesting about the race was a caution happened at the right moment where everybody was very short on fuel, so nobody knew who was going to make it to the end, if somebody was going to run out of gas and cause a big wreck, so I decided to stay to the end, to the dismay of Izzy, I can tell.
Yeah.
But after we left, the way they have it set up, there's so many people there, they open up both sides of the road to let you go out, but it takes a while for them to shut down the one side, so they wasn't letting cars out from where we were, and she started getting a little panic mode and all, why are we moving, why are we moving? It's like, there's cops right there, honey. There's
nowhere to go.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm taking, like, my Indian friend Ramulu, I keep talking about NASCAR when he used to work for me. He's like, I want to see a race. I took him up to Watkins Glen. He enjoyed it very much. We got autographs. Took a guy from Bulgaria to Pocono. He had a great time. It just depends on the right situation, the right times. And I mean, if you put a gun to my head and said, was that a really exciting race? I'd be like, no, it'd probably be a C- at best. People were spanned out. Not a lot of changes, not a lot of passes.
Yeah.
It wasn't the best one. You can't always tell. I mean, I'm sure you've gone to plenty of ball games and stuff like that, but in the end, you're kind of like, yeah, that was kind of boring. But, you know, you still say it was an event. So it's, I mean, if anything, I would say if I ever said, let's go to a race again, I'd probably take your one locally here to Atlanta. So even if we want to, I can say, if you want, we'll go in two cars. You get bored, you can take off and beat traffic and, or hang with my mom, and be maybe probably a night race so we don't have to worry about it. So where it's just like cool in Atlanta, they have higher up seats that are pretty decent prices. And if you go to the truck race, it's even cheaper. So you might be able to like talk some people and make an event and what NASCAR is.
Well, I guess Izzy won't be going to any more of those. That's what it sounds like.
She won't volunteer would be the best answer.
How far is Talladega completely from where you live?
I think it's about an hour and a half.
Oh, that's not bad either. Yeah.
No. It literally just one highway I took go down, so it's really nothing.
No. Well, I think it is time for a guest. I think it's just that time. Because nothing goes better with NASCAR racing than beatboxing.
I mean, we remember the great race at Pocono with Run DMC out there just jamming. And, you know, I remember Dale Earnhardt got out of his car and jammed with them. And saying that he gave up the race for it. I mean, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. Because nothing goes better with that. Well, that would be interesting, too. When you were walking through, did you hear anybody playing hip-hop?
No, I would say it's kind of a different genre I was hearing.
Gotcha. Probably a lot of country and southern rock, I would imagine.
Ding and ding.
Well, we're going to go into a different area now. We're going to get our guest
on. Maybe
online.
We can bring the groups together.
That's it.
The way Verbal Shenanigans rolls.
Yeah, beatboxing NASCAR event. Mm-hmm. But, Berlo, you're a big beatboxer, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. Every time I see a box, I'm like, you know what I'm going to do with that.
So if I told you to drop a sick beatboxing, what would it sound like?
It would be like... And then 3 hours later after I repeat, you might tell me to shut up. So.
Very slow.
It's a buildup. You're like, all right, it's going to turn around. And it's like, really? No, this is all I have.
This is it.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to get a beatboxer on the show. And I reached out to a guy by the name. His name is John Lopez, but he goes by the name J Flo, J-F-L-O. And he's won competitions. He seems like he does all sorts of beatbox championships. So I want to get a little insight as to what he does. So we're going to have Mr. J Flo on the show. What do you know? Here we go. It's about to blow. For this show.
I'm drinking a cup of Joe.
No, you're not.
Scott, the fourth wall. Don't be showing that. Yeah. Don't be showing that to the audience.
But anyway, let's get Mr. J Flo on the line.
Yeah.
I'm the one that has the more sultry, beautiful voice, and he's the one that sounds like he eats raccoon.
Howdy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, you sound good, man. So.
This is good?
Yep, sounds definitely perfect.
All right, that's cool, man.
A lot of people don't ever do a sound check, so I like your style. I mean, I guess using a microphone for a living makes sense that you would want a sound check.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, make sure because I'm running my I'm running it through the computer and stuff, so I just want to make sure it sounds
totally. So, John, I don't know if I call you John or if I just refer to you as J Flo, but thanks for giving us a couple minutes on the show here. We appreciate the time here.
Yeah, man, no problem. Thank you for reaching out to me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. So I wanted the show is focused around just getting interesting people on the show. We've, you know, had a lot of rappers and singers and artists and athletes and whatnot, and we never had a beatboxer. And I looked up online a bunch of different beatboxers, and your name popped up in a bunch of different circles. And I watched a bunch of videos of yours, very impressive. So I guess I have to start at the beginning. How does one go from, you know, making weird noise by themselves in the car, or you know, like just you know. From that to actually making this into something, to deciding that, hey, I could actually make music out of this. When did you start getting into this?
I mean, it's been quite a long process. But for me, the way it started was I've always been into music. I've always been passionate about music and making music. And when I was a kid, I'd actually started with making beats. So it was more like music production. I want to say this was like 2003. I was using like a software like Fruity Loops.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, stuff that people would use to make beats. And I don't know. I was like the cool kid in school who was like making beats and stuff, and I just became really obsessed with like making music. So that's how it started for me. It was more like an obsession with making music on the computer. And then after a while, because I was doing it so often, I kind of started making sounds.
Right.
You know what I mean? Trying to mimic what I was doing. And then later on, I heard someone beatbox at like a high school talent show. And that's kind of when I asked myself, like, what the hell is this? Like, you know, like, I've been doing this, but I didn't really know this was a thing. And whatever that guy did, it was pretty cool. And it was also around the time when YouTube was coming out. So I found a lot of beatboxing online. It kind of just switched my interest like that.
Now, when you originally started making music, were you trying to go after like some heroes in music that you have, or were you doing everything original?
Yeah, so when I started making music, actually my brother was like a huge influence, because he was making beats as well, and he kind of like showed me the software and all this stuff. But I used to just want to make beats and make my own music, and I was making hip-hop beats and reggaeton beats, kind of like what was cool back then. And I used to actually upload my stuff onto soundclick.com.
Okay.
I don't know if you ever heard of
SoundClick. I don't know. I remember Fruity Loops, that's for sure.
The SoundClick was kind of like the SoundCloud of back then.
Okay.
But it was all beats, and then people would like beats or dislike beats, and then they go up in charts. Nice. And then I had a reggaeton beat that was actually in the top 10 for like a month.
So it's like the MySpace of beatboxing is what you're telling us.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so take us from there. So you're making beats electronically, whether it be Fruity Loops and keyboards and whatnot. And you say you hear this beatboxing competition. And when do you actually like how does a beatboxer like start? Like as far as going out and trying this in front of people, is it do you go out to an open mic? Do you go out there with an MC and try to try to do something live? Where do you start the transition to something live?
Well, I mean, for me, the interest was when you make a beat on the computer, it takes a very long process. You know, you sit there, you click stuff, you add stuff where you want, you play a melody, you record it, you play back. It's almost like video editing.
Right.
So for me, it was just very tedious. So when I actually discovered beatboxing, it was almost like I could express what was in my mind, but a little more direct. Obviously, I wasn't good, but the idea clicked in my head. It was like, oh, like this is a great way for me to just express what I'm thinking at the moment. It became like a language. It became the instrument. At first, I was just practicing. I was practicing for a while. I think I was 19. Yeah, after I was originally started beatboxing when I was 13, but I think I was 19 when I kind of decided to take it a little more serious. And actually, the American beatbox scene didn't even start yet. I want to say the first American Beatbox Festival was in 2010. So I was actually one of the first guys, along with a bunch of other people, that were really interested in this art form in the American scene, as far as what you would consider new school compared to the old school. And so, yeah, I went to the first event. But for me, I the first thing I did is I went to an open mic.
Right.
It was at Stony Brook College in Long Island. I'm actually from Long Island, New York. And yeah, that's kind of where I started. I went from there. I actually met some people at Stony Brook College after I performed. And then I found out there was a Stony Brook College beatbox group. It was really weird. And then and then I started performing. You know, I started performing at like these college parties, and I was like sleeping in dorms, and I wasn't even going to the college, and I was performing for like the college.
Wow.
And I was performing for like classes and this and that. And no, I really took it really serious. And like, I started practicing a lot. And at the time, I was so serious that like, I actually quit work and quit college. And my parents weren't really happy.
Yeah.
But I practiced really hard for like, I want to say a year. So it was like a serious thing for me when I actually really wanted to do that. But nonetheless, around that time, in 2011 is actually when I won the American champ. So I felt like my hard work and dedication actually paid off.
So take us through like going as you're starting and going to be a champion. Like out of curiosity, like what would be like an average length of a beatbox or a song? I'm not sure what you call it. And what's the kind of things you realized you had to work on before you got to that kind of level as a champion?
Well, actually, the first serious battle I was ever in was the American champ. So it was like, for me, everything was like fresh. I had no experience really prior to that as far as battling. The only thing I knew of the battles is based off on what the European scene was doing, because the European scene developed a lot quicker. I want to say it started in like 2004 too. For me, it was like a fresh experience and I kind of just went for it. But for somebody who doesn't really know what these events are like, it's usually like a 2-day event. And usually what it is you sign up. In some cases, sometimes you have to pay a fee because that's how they keep the scene going. You have to pay for venues. You have to pay judges. You have to pay a lot of people. So it's like the people who attend these events are usually beatboxers. And then you have a great range of people who are not beatboxers that go to these things. And you go through your elimination round. So what your elimination round is, you just go on stage and you do depending on the battle, either a minute 30 to 3 minutes of you doing a routine or doing whatever it is that you want to do on stage.
Right.
And then the judges like judge you on different criteria. So certain criteria are like technicality. So like, are your rhythms on pattern, your rhythms on time, are your structure good? So basically you get judged on these things. Mm. Stage presence, all these different things. And then the top 16 squatters will be the final battle. And usually the final battle is like the next day. So usually you have 1 day for eliminations and you have 1 day for the battle.
Huh.
So people usually want to attend the battle. You know, that's like the more entertaining thing, I would say.
Now, when you're up there, like your personal stuff, I'm sure maybe it's changed over the years, but are you going off the cuff, or are you going like a rehearsed routine, or do you do a little bit of both? Like, do you have certain things you want to get to? And like, what is your strategy going into something like that?
So usually, typically, beatboxers, we have like routines. We have, usually we have routines. And basically what it is, like when you practice, you try to come up with routines. And I feel like when you're up on stage and you're battling, it's almost like you're doing a freestyle, mm-hmm. but you're mm-hmm. taking the routines that you have and you kind of like pick and choose what's adequate for that round. And you kind of like have to make it flow and put it together. And usually it's like a minute 30 rounds. So you do two rounds. Each person goes up, you know, 1 minute 30, 1 minute 30 for two rounds.
Now, when you're in these competitions, you have to base what you're going to do against your competition directly. Is it something where if you hear somebody up there and it's like, oh, that's kind of similar to some of my stuff, that you change it up at the last minute?
Well, a good thing is like a counter. People you say it's a counter. So like if somebody has a build up to a special sound or a special beat pattern and people like it, and then you go up right away and you can actually showcase that you could do the same thing or you could do it better. That's actually a counter. Uh-huh. And then basically you're showing that it's not really all that skillful or it's not all that great. You could do it as well. And then you kind of like do your own thing. But a lot of, for me, preferably, I don't really like to do countering. I like to just kind of do my own thing. Yeah, I mean, you're also judged on originality as well. That's another judging criteria.
So now take us to, I believe it was, correct me, 2014 when you won this, the competition or whatever competition was. So take us when you win that. First off, what kind of like prizes are available like for winning these type of thing? Is it more of a you know, a credit kind of thing, more of something that you achieved, or is there actual money to be made as a beatboxer?
Okay, so I mean, the first battle I have a couple titles. The first battle I won was the 2011 American Beatbox Championships. I also won the 2013 Midwest Beatbox Champion.
Okay.
And then I have like a Beatbox of the Year award, and I just competed this year after like, you know, 4 years or whatever. I got top three. But the first year I won, I got a little bit of money. It was like more like a, you know, a dumb change, kind of like you perform something.
Right.
But the thing is, like, the scene is kind of big. So you have like the UK, the Canadian championships. You have Mexico. You have South America. You have Italy, France, Germany, blah, 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 blah. You have all these championships, international championships. And then you have the world championships, which is like every 3 years. And to compete in that, you have to be an actual champion. So the American scene was kind of fresh when I won. So there wasn't really like all that funding evolve. You know what I mean? So I didn't really get that much money from that. But the main thing is, like, you get opportunities.
Right.
So, like, if you're a champion, then you kind of, like, go to an international battle. If you win that, then, like, you kind of, like, build your – I want to say it's more like people respect you, people look up to you, and then, like, there's this whole online vibe, and people look at the videos and all these things. So then you kind of, like, people follow you and then know if you – they know who you are. And really, it's more for like getting your opportunities, and also as an artist. I mean, as any artist, just like if you were an actor or something, if you win an Oscar or if you win something,
right,
it kind of like helps towards like getting other jobs, getting other things. That's the way I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Some battles now, like you do get a decent amount of money, but even then, it's still not that much. I think like some international battles you could get anywhere between like $1,000 to like $5,000, which is a good thing if you get paid and if you win, right, you know, because but then you gotta like win the battle, you know. It's like using all this money to travel, mm-hmm, to these international things, and but then you gotta win. But then the thing is, for me, example, like if you actually judge, if you become good and people respect you, you actually get paid as a judge. And then if people respect you, you can showcase, you can perform, and you get paid when you do that. So it's kind of like building up to like that reputation, really. That's really when it helps, you know, a little bit. But the scene is still kind of fresh, still kind of underground. So really for a lot of people, they just do it for the love and the passion of the art form, really.
Yeah. So you were talking about it leads to jobs. Now, what is that first job like? Is it like a collaboration with a musician? Is it something independent? Are you making beats online and people buying it? What's that first job like?
I mean, I've done a lot of things. I've been on like two films. I've done a Volkswagen commercial. I've made music for like ESPN. I've done all these things, and then like with the reputation too, I try to like book myself for gigs. So like I perform at festivals, venues, all sorts of clubs, events, whatever. And that's kind of like what I'm talking about, is like when you go to these events, you go to these club venues, you go to these festivals, you try to book yourself. It's like, well, who are you? Like, why should I book you? You know, it's like, well, here's like my resume. I'm this person. This is what I've done. This is, you know what I mean? That's kind of like how it works.
Right.
But I guess that works like that for like any sort of artist or musician, really.
Right. So are you still currently making electronic music too, or are you completely involved in just beatboxing?
So yeah, I do electronic music as well. So that's like my side thing. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I do think the beatbox scene needs a lot of improvement as far as like making a living. So I do. I take my talent, which is the beatboxing, and try to apply it to other things. And then I try to also take my electronic music. Now, the electronic scene is like a whole nother world, but yeah. There's like so much room to like make money off of that scene.
Interesting. Out of curiosity, what do you feel is like the hardest instrument or music to make a beat for, in your opinion?
Make a beat for?
A beat.
Well, I would say, you know, I would say like when you get into like technical patterns, I have a hard time. I've been practicing and doing so much of like 4/4 beats. So it's like right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. But if you have like polyrhythms, if you have things like jazz, jazz uses more like sometimes polyrhythms or rhythms that are not like just 4/4. It could be like 3/7.
Yeah.
That could like get a little confusing. And I know a lot of beatboxers can't do that. So,
right. Have you ever tried to figure out exactly how many noises you can, like how many instruments you're actually able to do by yourself? Like in one thing, like, have you ever sat down and say, I can make this many sounds at once?
Not really, to be honest.
Yeah, I always wonder that, like how, you know, we all joke around in the shower and whatnot and you know, and beatbox to ourselves. But I always wondered, like, how guys like you are able to do, you know, it'll sound like a 4-piece band playing with one guy. So it really is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I know some guys done that, actually. I think there was, like a Guinness World Record, like how many sounds you can do in 10 seconds for, like, beatboxing. And I think it's, like, the French champion did, like, I don't even know how many. But it's just, like, it just sounds like a machine gun going off, man. Like, it's...
So what do you do on a regular basis now? You talk about the beatboxing needs to improve, but like on a Monday through Friday, are you just, you know, building more music? Are you going out to gigs or clubs?
I'm just a regular guy, man. No, I actually work full time as well. I do that. And then like I do my gigs. I just moved to Philadelphia. Because I'm originally from New York. It's way too freaking expensive, man. You know? New York is way too expensive. So I've been living in Philly now, and I recently just bought a house. So I actually work full-time, but then I do my gigs, and then I'm kind of, like, flexible. And then Philadelphia does offer a techno house scene, and it also offers, like, a scene for music.
Right.
Then on top of that, I do my beatboxing. So, for example, Thursday I fly out to Chicago for the Midwest Beatbox Battle, which I'm going to be judging.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's kind of what I do. I just try to book myself for whatever it is I can book myself. Really, the ultimate goal is to get an agent so that I can have more consistent work so I don't have to work full-time. But really, that's like the ultimate goal.
Awesome. Now, if people want to go check out your work and whatnot and see what you're doing and check out some of your music, where is the best place to check it out?
Really, my Instagram. I do like a lot of updating on Instagram. I also do artwork. I do painting. I just came out with a painting with an art page. So it's JFlow Beatbox Art. JFLO Beatbox Art, and then also JFlow Beatbox is just a regular musician page. So
awesome.
And also YouTube. YouTube is JFLO Beatbox, so that's JFLO Beatbox. There's a lot of cool stuff on YouTube, even if you just, like, search me.
Yep.
Because I've been on, like, other beatboxing channels, and you can probably find, like, my Volkswagen commercial on there, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, that's where I feel like you really get a sense of what you do is YouTube, because I was definitely, you know, going through different things and seeing your live performances and some of your just solo stuff, so definitely cool to check out. Now, before you go, I mean, we would totally be remiss to not ask you to give us a little ditty here, you know, a minute or so of some beat for us. We have to have some kind of beat, and if you feel like incorporating Verbal Shenanigans, you know, that's great too.
Yeah, all right, I'm down.
Yeah, take us out, man. Take us out.
All right, well, let me warm up a little bit. Verbal Shenanigans. You are listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
I can see you practiced once or twice. Now, I can't tell you how much I just love that. That was fantastic.
That was amazing.
Dude, thank you so much for giving us the time, and good luck with everything you got going. I hope that you know, this finds you a permanent career as a beatboxer, and we see you and Jay-Z putting songs out together.
Yeah, man, that'd be cool. Thank you for inviting me and asking me questions and stuff. I really appreciate it.
All right, Mike, your turn.
Verbal Shenanigans.
It's almost tempting to use that as our intro.
Sneak mine in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, maybe I'll have like a battle off, like, and then Oh, I was digging that. I could have listened to him do that for another hour. That was pretty cool. It's ridiculous. The one and only JFLO. I forgot to ask him. I always like asking like guys in hip hop and stuff what other names they went under. If they went under like cheesy names before. what would your beatbox name be, or your MC name?
That's an interesting question.
Don't say Dub Earls either.
No.
We've had enough of that nickname over 200 episodes.
Burrows the MC.
You've been pushing that nickname for your agenda for 200 episodes. We're done. We're done with it.
Nah. Yeah. That's my mad improv skills, yo.
Yeah, and sick. Sick. But JFLO. I had a very nice eventful weekend myself. It was like one of those weekends where just like everything kind of went right in a busy weekend. Like it was a very busy weekend on tap, but it was like everything that I did was cool. Like none of it seemed to be a hassle or anything. Like Friday, so Thursday night I had my best friend Alex got married. Oh well, he got married Friday, but we had the rehearsal dinner. Now my friend Alex is an Italian man, so and his wife is very Italian, so things can be flashy sometimes, you know, going with the stereotype. But we're at the rehearsal dinner, and he hands out the groomsmen gifts, and he gives me a he gives all of us. So I was the best man in this wedding, but he gives all the grooms, and there was 9 of us total, I think, Invicta watches. Now these watches are like, I'm not a big watch guy. I have this one watch that I wear. They're very like, here, I can actually show you, but they're very shiny and like very big. It's very big, but they're like a very nice watch. And, so he gives us all these watches and he leaves the price tag was left on mine. What the hell do you, here, I'll show you the watch we're on video chat.
All right.
Okay. So this is the watch. Okay. This is I'm probably closer to you. Okay.
Not bad.
No, obviously it's very nice.
It's kind of simple, but still elegant and still fancy.
Big, though. Big. Like,
yeah,
look at it in comparison to my normal watch. You know, I wear like a very simple leather band and like just a basic watch. But so what do you think the price tag on this was that was left?
I am going to guess. I'm going to guess $499.
Higher, Bob.
$899.
$895, it said.
Wow.
Now, okay. So he's like, oh, I got a deal because, you know, I bought the ring through him and I bought earrings through him and he gave me a deal on these. Now, okay, say you got a deal on $895. So what's a deal? $400, $500 maybe, something like if you're buying 9 of them, you know?
Yeah, I would probably guess around the 20% to 30% off.
Yeah,
whatever the math is.
So say he spent, let's just say $500. 9 groomsmen, that's still $4,500 just on gifts.
God bless him.
That's the only
answer I can say.
Insanity. I'll wear it. Like, I'll probably like save it for like when I'm going to a wedding or something like that, or maybe if we have a fancy dinner out or something like that, I'll wear it. But holy God, like I was kind of blown away. Like, dude, what are you doing? You know, like I'm not good with like getting gifts. I almost like, dude, why would you get us that? Like, that's insanity, man. Like, that's a lot of money, no matter who you are, just to give your groomsmen gifts, man.
He gave you the watch. You gave him a $25 gift card to Old Country Buffet.
How did you know?
Well, I can read you, man. You're wearing the Old Country Buffet T-shirt, Scott. I know what you're doing there.
I'm trying.
I know you go there a lot. You just hook up on the bourbon chicken all day, and then you go home with your fancy watch.
I'm trying to get sponsorship here, Berlew. I'm trying to get Verbal Shenanigans brought to you by the Old Country Buffet.
Well, I mean, you go there enough, they're bound to give us something. I mean, you got the $25 gift card. You got to work harder, man.
I can't even remember
the waiter.
I can't remember the last.
I'm going to a wedding.
I can't remember the last time I went to a buffet, like an all-you-could-eat kind of joint. I can't even remember. I know there's a sushi one I want to go to, but as far as like a old school like buffet like that, I can't
Golden
remember.
Corral, yeah. Old yeah. Country Buffet.
That might have been the last time I went. Golden Corral was in Delaware about 5 years ago with Mr. Johnny Watson.
Was that? Are you talking about Super Bowl weekend, or was that?
No.
That was Pennsylvania.
Did we go to Golden Corral? No, we went to like a.
I think we tried to go there to see if they had the football game on, and they didn't, and we took off.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I'm not a big...
Oh, blueberry pancakes. Yeah, I remember those days with Watson.
Yeah. So the wedding was great. The wedding was beautiful wedding. I had to do my best man speech, which is always a little nerve-wracking, you know, even though you would think like getting up on stage all the time would make it a little bit more comfortable, but it's a different thing, especially when you know like half the crowd and you're wondering if like the jokes you're gonna make about, like, obviously I go for all humor basically, I don't go for a serious speech, you know, the jokes you're gonna make about this guy, are they gonna translate to the rest of the group, or is it just gonna be the people that know him? So there's always that kind of thing. But speech went well, very well. Maybe I'll even pop the audio in at the end of the episode or something so people can check it out. the girl, one of the maid of honor, she did a speech very shy, and like she sounded very shy. Apparently, she's very shy. But at the end, the DJs cue up like the Fresh Prince of Bel Air music, and she like made a rap about them. That was pretty impressive. So it was pretty creative. But God,
how much crowd work did you do that night?
How long you been married? These guys haven't been married very long.
God, I liked the speech, but you really ripped into my dad, man.
Anybody celebrating anything? But so wedding's great. I mean, God, they had a dessert. It wasn't like a dessert room. It was like a room full of dessert. Like it was. I don't even eat dessert really, but like my fiance was like in heaven. Like there was like a milkshake machine and a espresso station and like every kind of cake you can imagine. It was insane.
You just walk in and there's like a huge chocolate fountain in
pretty
the
much.
Middle of the room.
I think there was like a little fondue like chocolate fountain state. It was insanity. Like I've never really seen it. So the wedding ends and then they had the after party. And the after party was in where the cocktail hour was. But, of course, being the Italians that they were, the DJ comes to the after party and there's, like, red lights and, like, they're just playing nonstop, like, club music. Like, and then, sure enough, they're serving pizza and, like, mini hamburgers and whatnot. So it was, like, and he was, like, he used to be a DJ, so it was, like, right up his alley. So I was happy for him. So the wedding went well. Like my parents came to the wedding because this kid's been, you know, my friend since basically six, seven years old. So we basically almost 30 years we've been friends. But I figured I wanted to share a story of when we were growing up, and I don't know if I've ever told you this on the podcast, but if not, it's still a funny story for the listeners. So when we were probably about 14 years old. We started getting into, like, lifting. Like, I had gotten, like, a weight bench and a curl bar and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We had set up in my basement. Now, my basement at the time was the finished side, and then there was an unfinished side, a complete unfinished side. So it was, like, a good area to work out and put weights and stuff like that. And, like, you know, we were setting up our cool little gym, like, our stations. And we had, like, pictures of, like, Pamela Anderson and, like, Jennifer Love Hewitt on the wall. You know, really, really meatheading
so
it out.
So you're, like, curling, looking at them, like, yeah, one day.
Yeah, like, ladies.
Five more reps.
Yeah, exactly. Here we come.
Kelly Kapowski, you're mine.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it's like we're two scrawny, like, 14-year-old kids, you know, no, not lifting anything, you know. So at the time... now in my basement, now the bath, my parents' basement, there's a bathroom there. But before that, my dad, there was just a toilet in the room, kind of by the washer machine a little bit. It almost was in the middle of the room a little bit. Like he was going to build like a, you know, a bathroom. And for a while he kind of put it off for a long time. So it was kind of a functional toilet, but kind of in a big room. Like if you were taking a crap, it was kind of like crapping in the middle of nowhere, like a big, in the middle of a room. So, my buddy is, we're curling, okay? Now, he's curling, and at the time, it was like those old weight sets with the red collars on the ends, like, so he's curling, and he's trying to get it up, and as he's going to curl, the red collar falls off, and like two 10-pound plates go right through the toilet. Smash the toilet into a million pieces. Water starts shooting everywhere. And we're like, oh my God, like going to full panic mode. And like the toilet, it looked like a prop toilet. Like it exploded basically. Like there was pieces everywhere. Now, we go into full panic mode. I go to like try to pick up pieces and I slice my hand on a piece of porcelain, you know, like, and I to this day have this scar. So I'm bleeding all over the place. We're trying to figure out what to do. We don't know what to do. I mean, like, what is your reaction when you got water going everywhere and a broken toilet with a dumbbell sitting in the bottom of it?
Yeah. Meanwhile, you're yelling at the posters, don't look at us!
It was him! It was him!
I still love you! Don't look at me!
Now, now, we had to go wake my father up. Now, my father... This was probably 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. We were working out. Like, we didn't have anything to do. It was probably a Friday or something. Now, my father had to work at 4 o'clock in the morning, and he's, like, sleeping on the couch. Now, I, like, go to wake my dad up, you know, dad, like fear, like dad. And like, he does like the parent role, like in a deep sleep, like, what? Like, I'm like, we dropped the weight through the toilet. And he's like, what? Like, it took like 15 watts to, like, you know, like, what? Like if I woke you out of a deep sleep and I'm like, Berlew, Izzy threw a dumbbell through your toilet, you would be like, wait, like, it would
take. This sounds like a great new game show. We give people like NyQuil, we put them in a deep sleep, and it's like password, but it's like a really weird phrase. It's not something regularly going to happen. No, you got to guess that there's iguanas on Mars is the phrase.
So it took like 15 watts and like explaining to do, and my dad just like grumbled. Now my friend's panicking, like, your dad's gonna kill me. My dad like grumbles down, like, you know, shuts the water off to that, you know, to that area, and mm-hmm. eventually we gotta clean up the pieces of the toilet and bring them out into the garbage. And like I said this in my speech, I was trying to explain this to people, and I said, you know, like, even though that couple hundred dollars to, you know, to build a new toilet gave us like 20 years of making fun of Alex, like, you know, like, so it was well worth the investment, because my dad, like, every time, like, he'll come over to my parents' house and be like, be careful in the bathroom, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just like, be careful, like, watch out, here comes the potty murderer. Like, he just says, like, stuff like that. So this is the kind of stuff I've been through with this kid, and he's funny because he's like the most animated, angry person in the world. So I was able to tell that story. I was able to tell, I think I've also told this on the pod. I don't know if I told that. I don't think I ever told that one, right? Before? The weight through the toilet?
It somewhat sounds familiar, but I don't think it was anything recent where I'm like, oh yeah, like, yeah, a few weeks back.
Or, and then the other one was, this is the same kid I told you who had the waterbed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I explained that in the speech, how this kid had...
Oh, now it makes sense. Waterbed, Italian, makes total sense.
Exactly.
Now I got it.
He was the only kid I ever met that had a waterbed. Not just a waterbed, a queen-size waterbed, bro, in a room that was like 8x10 at max, okay?
Please tell me he was lifting weights near the waterbed one day.
Oh, this is... this is great, too. Now that you mentioned that, I didn't mention this, but... Before we had the weight set, he, you know, we didn't have any money growing up. I come to his house one day and I'm like, what's that? I see this board with books duct taped to it. And I'm like, what is that? And he's like, nothing. I'm like, dude, what is that? And he's like, well, I don't have any weight, so I lift this board with the books on it. It was like a piece of 2x4 with like a bunch of novels taped to the side of it.
So he's basically doing the Rocky IV workout.
Exactly.
You know? He's in a farm in Russia, just, we got some books and we got some tape. All right, let's do it. On fire!
So his room was 75% bed, like 20% entertainment center, and like CD racks and big speakers and TV, and then like 5% other. There was like nowhere to sit at all. So we always loved watching mob movies and like Devil's Games. We'd be sitting on the bed, you know, kind of riding the wave of the bed, and all of a sudden I'd be like, why is my back wet? And be like, oh no, it sprung another leak. And he always had like a patch kit nearby on his dresser. Like, towards the end of that, his bed was like more patch than it was bed. It had patches. It looked like someone came with a machine gun and was like, pop, 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 and like blew his waterbed away.
So he always had duct tape ready in case he ever wanted to get ripped or go to sleep.
Yeah.
Is basically what you're saying.
Waterbeds were... They're terrible. They're warm as hell. There's like a heater mode on them. And there's nothing comfortable about like rolling over and the whole bed like moving with you. It's a horrific idea. I wouldn't suggest to anyone ever like getting a water bed. I don't know how. He had it for years and years and years too. Very bizarre.
I got an idea. We'll combine a water bed with a koi pond. So that way, if you can't go to sleep, you can look at the fish under you.
Oh, all right. Well, why don't you get on that? Berlew's snake milk and koi pond beds.
I don't know what I'm doing, but they're selling out here in Alabama this weekend.
We're all out first. I don't know how the fish are going to survive, but that's a different story. You just have
we haven't figured out the whole feeding thing yet.
You just have a bear with dead fish floating around in it.
Well, it was fun the first week I had the bed.
Skinny ass fish just swimming around.
I'm sorry, I don't know how to get to you. I don't know what I'm missing.
I need to get some sleep at some point.
I can't tell sheep. It's easier to look at the fish.
So the wedding was great. The speech went over well. Like I said, maybe I'll tack it on to the end of this episode. People can check it out just for some more content or whatever. And so the next day, hung out with the parents for a while. And then I went to my sister's gender reveal party. My sister's becoming a man. No.
Good for her. Finally happy.
No, so my sister is pregnant and she went, like, all out. God, she must have went on Etsy or Amazon or whatever and typed in, like, gender revealed things. It was like you had to go in and, like, you could put on a blue pumpkin or a pink pumpkin. You could vote on the thing. You could circle what you think it is. There's boy names, girl names. So everybody gathers around and they have these, like, poppers, like, things, you know, they shoot off, kind of. They shoot pink or blue.
All right.
So I said it would have been a great prank if we just gave them two of them and they shot off like green or like brown brown confetti. Like, what? Like, what the hell is this?
Turns out I was constipated.
I had thought boy the whole time. I don't know why. Gut feeling. My mom, dad thought boy and my sister thought it was a boy. And she shot it off, and pink confetti go everywhere, and just an awesome, like, natural reaction. Like, oh, my God. Like, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. So we'll be having a niece due in March, okay?
All right.
So another niece to the Brennan clan. Mm. So that was cool. Then Saturday night, I go and do a fundraiser down in Hightstown, New Jersey.
I've been there.
Yeah. And there was a room above, like, a big poppin' bar. Like, it was a room, like, typical fundraiser look, like, no stage, kind of on the dance floor. But there was probably about 100 people for a field hockey team.
Okay.
So it was fine. You know, I got paid well. I just hosted. It was good. I felt bad that the headliner goes on, and all of a sudden you just hear, there was a band underneath in the bar. The whole top room was vibrating from the music. And he was just like, well, and he just tells us the last joke. And he's like, good night, everybody. He's like, I'm not dealing with that. So he was going to do 40. He probably did like 25. He's like, screw that. And I don't blame him for that. I'm not going to compete with a band, you know. Now, as a host, if that was going on, I'd probably have to deal with it. But, you know, the show was long enough at that point where it's just like they're not going to know the difference anyway. You're not going to compete with the floor rumbling underneath you.
Yeah, you figured they would just give them the light. Yeah. You didn't think they would go that far. Wow.
So that was cool.
I've seen some open mic comedians that just said F it and would still go through with their crappy-ass jokes after that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So that was a nice gig. It was like a half hour drive from where I was. Good pay. Got back by 10:30, which is awesome. And then Sunday, took the dog for a hike and stopped at Zigmeister Brewing and just had a good. It was just a good solid weekend, like where everything kind of worked out, and it was just a good time overall. So
good for you, Scott.
Absolutely, good weekend. Good weekend had by all. Anything else, Burlo?
No, I think we should just roll out of here.
I think we should roll out. Like what I did there. Burlo, anything to promote? Let's get out of here.
Some comedian friends podcast.
we are on the same promotion schedule every single week.
SNL, I know, nerds.
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. Give it to them.
The SNL nerds. That's with our friends John Trumbull and Darren Patterson. They do a weekly review of the latest episodes of Saturday Night Live and all, have a little banter. They're real fans of the show, and they know the history and so forth. So if you're interested in them, you can look up the SNL Nerds on any of your podcast platforms, or go to nonproductive.com. That's non-productive.com, and look for the SNL Nerds podcast.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to promote. So John Trumbull, if you go back when the Berlu surprise 40th birthday party, win, lose, or draw, he was the winner. And he didn't know Berlu at all. So he was like a last minute, he was like a last minute sub for AJ Mattioli, jerk.
And still haven't forgave him.
Yeah, and he came in and won it. That was a fun episode if you go back. I'm pretty sure it translates into audio, but it was very fun visually. So I guess I'm going to promote us, Berlu.
Yes.
So one, if you guys enjoy what you hear, go back and check out some of our guests over the last few weeks. Brandon Novak. I'm trying to think of who we've had recently. I know this is a great promotion.
we had great guests. We don't remember them at all for whatever reason.
Riley and Ed Breckenridge from Thrice the week before. Lucy Spraggan, who's a great singer over from the UK before that. So we've had a lot of cool episodes lately. And if I don't say myself, I think they've been pretty entertaining.
I think so.
If you like us, please subscribe on the old iTunes machine or whatever your favorite podcast platform is. And if you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would be awesome. That helps get us like more populated on different lists and whatnot. Considering, remember, we are, according to Berlu's suggested podcast, we are just like the Monday Morning Podcast with Bill Burr. So if you like Bill Burr, absolutely, you'll like us, right? I mean,
I can't see any differences that would make that wrong.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And then if you could follow us on Instagram, I try to put up cool pictures every week and things like that. I still want to put out more stuff, just trying to get it. So that's Verbal Shenanigans. Twitter is VS Comedy. Facebook is Verbal Shenanigans. And all that stuff. And I'm promoting next week. Next week is our one of our favorite things we do each year, which is our Halloween episode. We try to do two. We do a Halloween episode and a Christmas episode every year. And in the past, they have been a lot of fun. Like last year, we had an exorcist, Brian Ouellette, and we had Irony Singleton from The Walking Dead. So that was both, we put out two parts, and Christmas we put out two parts too. So we've had a lot of good content on those. So if you want to go back and check them out for Halloween, and I guess that's it, Berlu.
What else there to say? Oh, and pumpkin spice, whatever. That's also shared on Verbal Shenanigans. Yes. So there.
All right. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Thank you, Jay Flo. Keep the wind.
You are at listening your back. To Verbal Shenanigans. Listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Boom.